All right, today is December 15th, 2015. This is the first interview with Kevin Riley. My name is Troy Reeves, and I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Kevin, to start off with, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Sure, it's Kevin Riley, and the last name is spelled R-E-I-L-L-Y.
Great. Yeah, this is just a little closer to you. You're not going to have to speak up. I may have to speak up a little bit, but your voice was just fine. So as I said before we turned the recorder on, the first question is, why come to Wisconsin?
Sure. Well, I was at the State University of New York System office working at the time as a secretary to the Board of Trustees at SUNY. But I had done my undergraduate degree at Notre Dame in the Midwest, South Bend, and then my graduate degrees and some teaching and academic administration at the University of Minnesota. So I had a feel for the upper Midwest, and certainly living next door to Wisconsin for as long as I did, had some feel for the state and for the University of Wisconsin. And you know, the Wisconsin idea, I think, this was a very attractive idea to me, and it had legs then, and it still has legs now, and in my opinion. So I had spent a lot of my career working in higher education, trying to expand the base of it to a wider group of people, working in what was then called the Regents External Degree Program back in New York, which is one of the first non-traditional degree programs aimed at adults. Right out of graduate school, I went to work in a related program called the Program on Non-Collegiate Sponsored Instruction, which looked at education and training offered to people at their workplaces, corporations, government agencies, associations, and try to make credit recommendations for that training they might have received so that if they wanted to go back and get a degree program, they could get some credit and wouldn't have to start in freshman English if they'd spent 20 years as a reporter writing for a newspaper, for instance. So the Wisconsin idea, partly I think because of that, was always very attractive to me, that notion that the boundaries of the university should be the boundaries of the state, and the university was certainly about giving undergraduates a really first-class education, resident undergraduates, but also about more than that, trying to reach out to people who were not, for lots of different life reasons at that moment, being resident undergraduates or able to be. At the same time, my own background, academic background, is very traditional, MBA, MA, PhD in English, a dirty BAMAFID, as one of the characters says to another in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I think I might have mentioned to you, I co-taught the James Joyce course here at UW-Madison a couple years ago, so the sort of mainline academic traditional education is still really important to me, and the quality of the University of Wisconsin, in addition to its particular emphasis in the Wisconsin idea, was certainly something that attracted me as well. So the reputation, both in the quality of more traditional higher education and the commitment, a really, really deep, meaningful commitment to higher ed outreach, I'd say, are two of the big attractors.
Could you offer what memories you have then about the process of actually getting the position here?
Yeah, it was advertised in the Chronicle, and I applied and went through a search process. I didn't know anybody really at the University of Wisconsin at the time, and I was lucky enough to emerge as the person that they thought was a good fit for the provost and vice chancellor position in the University of Wisconsin Extension at the time.
Had you been to Madison before?
I'd been through because when I was at the University of Minnesota, I used to come down to Chicago a fair amount because I had friends in the Chicago area. So occasionally I'd stop at Madison, but other than that, I really had no direct contact with the campus or the system.
Okay. Anything about the process of getting the job, including perhaps the on-site interview, anything that stand out in your mind?
I guess it worked, I'd say, in the sense that the more I talked with people here, the more they seemed to think it was a fit, and the more I seemed to think it was a fit. So by the time I actually got the offer, I was pretty well convinced it was the right thing for me to do, and it didn't take me very long to respond positively to the offer. So there was nothing quirky or particular that stands out about the process.
And then I know from talking to you previously that at that point in your life you had youngish children, so there was nothing in that process that the process of, you know, picking up and moving children from New York to Wisconsin that had any stumbles?
Well, no stumbles, but you always do think of that as a parent, and our oldest of three children at that time was in seventh grade, as I recall. So, you know, he was getting to the point where if we were going to make a move, we thought we should make it then rather than waiting till eighth grade or high school, because it just gets harder and harder, and kids get more and more resentful when you do that often enough. So, in our case, they got to Madison and they took to it very quickly. You know, it was hard to leave their friends in New York at some level, but in the case of, we have two boys and one girl. In the case of the two boys, they each got their own room when we got to Madison. They didn't have that in New York, so that was an attraction.
What time of year did you all get here?
Well, I came out on my own in September of 92, if I have this right. No, I came out in September of 96. And it was not easy to sell our house back in the Albany, New York area at the time because the economy was bad. Housing prices were dropping. So my wife and the kids were out there in that fall semester, so fall semester of 96. And we didn't sell the house and move the family then till right after the holidays. So it was January of 97, as I recall, and we got caught in a terrible blizzard coming across the New York Thruway. I remember one of those lake effect storms that they get not infrequently there, and had to really get off the road and try to find our way to a hotel. And so that was a little stressful, but the truck with our worldly belongings made it okay, and we did maybe a day behind what we had anticipated. But other than that, it was a smooth move, and it was just very nice to get the family out there after a semester of being separated.
So one of the general-ish questions we ask people who we interview is, what were the stated expectations of the job or of you inside the job?
Well, University of Wisconsin Extension, which was the institution I came to work in, really is a unique institution, and that's an overused word, but it really is in the country. There's no other institution quite like it that pulls together under one roof so many of the outreach extension functions of the university system, and has those in a separate institution with its own chancellor, vice chancellor, etc. So at the time, I think part of what they were looking for was somebody who could knit all of that further into the system by working well both with the system administration on outreach extension work and with all the other campuses. This is one of the things that makes extension unique and makes the roles of the provost and chancellor in extension unique, is that you really do a lot of your work with and through the campus chancellors and the campus provosts, because part of what you're doing is coordinating what they offer in terms of continuing education and outreach efforts. There are, for instance, in public radio and public television, there are studios and stations on campuses throughout the state, and the small business development centers, which are part of Extension, they are located on the campuses. But Extension plays this, a la the Wisconsin idea, this coordinating role, saying, you know, how do we make all that more than the sum of its parts? How do we make sure that those functions, including cooperative extension with 72 counties as partners across the state. How do we make sure that all of that is, you know, more than the sum of its parts? So I think they really were looking at that point for somebody who could help in what I might call the systemness of extension, continuing education, outreach. And my background working in a very large system in New York with the New York State Board of Regents there and then with the State University of New York trustees at the system level and with the chancellor at the system level, I think was attractive to them. I know it was. They told me as much. Mm-hmm.
From where I'm sitting, that sounds a bit daunting. How was it from where you were sitting?
Well, you know, it was attractive. I really spent my career from right out of graduate school working at in the big picture statewide level of things. So this was an opportunity to do more of that in a state that, as I said, was uniquely configured to do that successfully. And where I knew there was a real commitment to that part of the university mission. So that was exciting, but of course daunting is a fair word to describe it as well, because I was new, I didn't have connections here, and it was a process of, you know, getting to know the people, getting to know the state. And one of the things you have an opportunity to do, and you need to when you're the provost or the chancellor of extension, which I wound up being 4 years later, is, you know, you've got to get out and around the state. You've got to meet the county board people. You've got to know the other chancellors. You have to know the other deans of extension and outreach on the campuses. You have to know the people who are running the small business development centers and how they relate to the businesses and business associations in their regions. You have to know the agriculture community, but you also have to know the sort of youth development community that works with 4-H and family living. So it was, in that sense, for a new person coming into Wisconsin who had never lived or worked in Wisconsin before, it was both daunting but very a great opportunity, because the job said, you've got to get out and learn this state, which I did and had a lot of fun doing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did that start relatively quickly? I mean, did you get on the road and...
I did, and you know, you were expected to do that, and you know, it's a pretty big state geographically, and you really need both the chancellor and the provost and some of the other deans in extension to be out there moving around, working with the people, hearing what the folks in Wisconsin expect from the university. People who, again, who are not on campus as degree-seeking students. What do they want? What do they need? Translating that back into the university to say to our colleagues inside, okay, how can we supply this need? How can we respond to it? And also sometimes saying to people outside, well, we can't do this because it's not the university's mission, not the university's role. Somebody else is doing it or should be doing it. So there's... You're kind of an interlocutor on the line between the university and the rest of the world, which is, for me was part of the fun of the job.
Any of those early trips, you know, the first semester, the first year, stand out?
Well, the first time I walked through a barn and had some cow manure splash up on me is memorable. I grew up in New York City and didn't have much of a background with agriculture, so I knew that was one area where I needed to learn quickly. I guess, ironically, the reason I grew up in New York City is because all four of my grandparents were Irish immigrants from failed farms in the west of Ireland who came to the United States for a better life for their kids and grandkids, and, you know, it worked, and that's why I believe in that vision of the United States, and we hope we can continue it. But when I've talked to the agriculture agents around the state, and these are, you know, employees of Cooperative Extension, part of UW Extension, and they're still, you know, prominent people in their counties because they know all the agricultural associations. They work directly with farm families, and people know them. So I used to like to say to them when I was new and they were wondering, who the hell is this guy from New York City that where I grew up, the farm was the place where we got the new Yankees and Mets from.
I hope some of them found the humor in that.
They did.
So you came here, you've said a couple of times you really had no sort of real contacts. So who, if anyone, sort of helped you as you started to make connections and know where to go when you started traveling around the state?
Sure. Well, certainly, you know, there's a good staff in Extension who was anxious to help, and that was nice. Catherine Lyle, who was my predecessor as president of the UW system, was president when I was hired as the provost in Extension, and she was very, very helpful in that regard. At the time, Pat Boyle, who was the former chancellor of Extension, was on the Board of Regents. He was appointed by Governor Thompson after he retired as Extension chancellor to be a regent. And so, obviously, he really understood Extension. He was a native of Wisconsin. He's passed away sometime in the last couple of years. Grew up on a farm around Toma. So, you know, he had a feel for the state in a way that I didn't. He also had a real affection for the Irish, Pat Boyle, and he had actually spent some time in Ireland working with them on their extension program, so we had that in common. So he was certainly very, very helpful. And both Catherine and Pat were kind of mentors, I think, at that point. Okay. Very helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you weren't traveling, when you were here in Madison, where are you physically located?
On Lake Street, and the extension building on Lake Street, which, again, was a nice thing, I think, both about the extension administrative offices and the system administrative offices. They're both on the campus. You're not, as in some other states, in a office building somewhere downtown off campus, so you really have a sense of being part of the campus community, part of the rhythms of the campus, and I think that's healthy for an extension operation or for a system administration.
Mm-hmm. So who, if anyone, then on campus did you start to get to know and connect with?
Sure. Well, you know, you work, one of the interesting things about the extension leadership jobs and the system leadership job is you work with all the campuses, right? So they're sort of all your campuses, and you have to try to be careful not to be seen by any campus as, you know, working better with the guy down the road or the campus upstate. So I always used to like to say when I go to a campus, you know, this is my favorite campus, and people would laugh. But when I came to Madison in particular, David Ward was the chancellor. Donna Shalala had left recently to join the Clinton administration. And John Wiley was the provost. And John Torfey was the vice chancellor for administration. When I would meet with those three, my role as extension provost and chancellor, there was a lot of intellectual wattage in the room, I always felt, and I enjoyed working with all of them. And, you know, one of the interesting things, so this is 96 when I arrived, interesting things going on in the years after I arrived with David Ward as chancellor. You know, this was the era when the internet was first forming up, and he actually was the chair of the National Internet Committee at the time, so it was very interesting to work with them and hear about that. Shortly after that, the scientists on this campus started to really make breakthroughs in charting the human genome, which is, you know, continues to have huge implications for health and other matters. So that was very very exciting. Donna Shalala had really worked during her chancellorship on improving the undergraduate experience and making for residence hall centers of some undergraduate learning, and that was exciting to see and have going on, and of course the improvement she made in the in the sports side of the culture here was notable as well. So it was a very lively, interesting, great place to come to, as it is now. I mean, the University of Wisconsin-Madison is just one of the great universities in the world still, and we want to be sure we can preserve that for future generations of Wisconsinites and others who come here to learn.
Mm-hmm. Not that there it probably ever is anything like a typical day, but you know, during these 4 years that you're provost and vice chancellor, what sort of things may have happened on a typical day?
Right. Well, you know, one of the really interesting things about the extension leadership jobs, both provost and chancellor, is the variety of the kinds of activities that they undertake. I mean, if you're the chancellor of any campus, even a huge one like Madison, there's a lot of variety, but everything is kind of related under the teaching, research, and outreach missions. In extension, you know, you had the cooperative extension culture, let's call it, right? Working with county boards, farmers, families, 4-H, community natural resource development work. There are agents who worked on that all across the state. And these are agents and staff who are embedded in their communities. You know, they live there. The counties paid and still pay half of the salaries of these people. I mean, there's a huge commitment by the public through their county elected officials to extension. And that has its own kind of culture of how do we translate the latest best knowledge from university research out into our communities all over the state so that it helps people make better lives for themselves. Then you have public broadcasting, which is part of extension, public radio and public television. And although they both have outreach missions, their cultures are very, very different because radio and television, you know, is broadcasting all around the state with sort of a message with whatever program they have. And some of those programs are locally produced. Some of them are nationally produced. Whereas the co-op folks are out there, you know, boots on the ground in every county. And then small business development, again, very different culture from the other two. And continuing education and extension, which is the part of UW Extension that works directly with the continuing ed outreach units on the campuses, much more campus-focused, right, working with their colleagues on the campuses in terms of what programs they put together for the continuing ed clients in their regions. So there's a great, in Collins' book, Good to Great, and I'm not a big fan of those kinds of management books, but I think he has a number of them better than many because they're based on some pretty good research that he had people do. But in the highest version of leadership in his taxonomy, a CEO, he quotes a CEO saying, I never stop trying to be qualified for the job. And that's the way I always felt with extension and with the system job, certainly, is that, you know, these are really big, complicated jobs in the case of extension, you know, widely different cultures and audiences that you were talking to. You know, you could be in the morning at a meeting with the provosts from around the system who met once a month, or the chancellors from around the system when I was chancellor who met once a month, still do. And then in the afternoon, you could be out talking to a farmer who'd never gone much beyond ninth grade about what was going on and how we were trying to help her or him. You could that evening be at a reception for an opening of a new business in La Crosse that the Small Business Development Center there helped to develop. So that was really fun. Most people don't have the opportunity to deal with that kind of variety of ponds that the university has its toes in, and you did in the extension jobs. I did in the extension jobs.
Mm-hmm. Kevin, who were the people that reported to you that, for lack of a better word, sort of became your inner circle, or the people that you helped you as you went along and
sure,
you know, touched all these ponds?
Sure. So, well, in extension, the longest-serving person who was provost when I was chancellor. Well, let me say, so when I started as provost, Don Hanna was the chancellor at UW Extension. He was the one who hired me into the job as provost. He stepped out not long after I came, and then Al Beaver became the interim chancellor of Extension. He was a system official, and Catherine Lyle asked him to take over as the interim when Don left. So I worked closely with Al for, Al was the interim for, I think, around 3 years, long interim stay. And I worked with him as the provost, and he as interim chancellor over the course of those 3 years. And he was another great mentor. Al, again, was a farm kid from Wisconsin and a soil scientist, so you couldn't get any more boots on the ground and in the ground than Al. And started at, went to UW-Madison, had worked and taught at UW-River Falls. So he really had a great grasp of the state, very diplomatic, and he was a great, again, mentor and good person to work with. And then when he decided to retire, they did a national search, and I applied as the inside candidate and did get the job as chancellor, and we can talk about that when we get to that part of the story. The longest serving provost I had was a fellow by the name of Marv Van Kekerix, who it's V-A-N capital K-E-K-E-R-I-X, who came from Stevens Point. He was the head outreach person, extension person at Stevens Point. And then I hired him as the provost, very strong. And I had as my chief sort of operations and administrative officer, Bob Anderson, who, again, very, very strong, very well respected. He had been at the system administration for a long time when I hired him into Extension. So they were a great kind of chief academic officer, vice chancellor for academic affairs and provost, and then vice chancellor for administrative affairs or whatever we called it. And then you had deans over the operational areas. So Carl O'Connor was the dean most of the time I was there, if not the whole time. He was the dean of cooperative extension. Mike Offerman, it's O-F-F-E-R-M-A-N, was the dean of continuing education and outreach. And so he was the person who worked with all the campuses on their continuing education work. And this is, I think, important. He was vital in starting something that we started in Extension, working with the campuses, called Learning Innovations. And this was the time, Troy, when campuses were just starting to say, oh, this online thing, we have to get our curriculum online. You know, which programs are we going to do? What does it cost? What kind of knowledge do we have to have? How do we train our faculty once we have the technical capability to do this, to actually use it effectively, pedagogically? So Learning Innovations was formed up by Extension to help campuses do that, and especially campuses that don't have the resources on their own that a Madison would, that, you know, needed the help a lot less than some of the others. So that was an important role for Extension at the time. The head of the Small Business Development Centers was Erica Kauten, K-A-U-T-E-N. She worked for one of the utilities, so she came out of the business side and was very effective in helping small businesses get going. So those were the three. The biggest operations are really the co-op and continuing ed extension working with the campuses. Small business development's a little smaller. So those were some of the lieutenants at the time.
Right. We try to ask a question about diversity. Diversity can mean many different things to many different people, but I mean, it sounds like four out of those five were male. I'm assuming.
That's right.
I'm assuming they were white male.
They were.
You know, in the mid '90s, what sort of emphasis, if any, is placed on trying to make sure there's a diverse workforce.
Right, right. Well, it's a good question, and there was quite a bit. So the leading diversity officer, whom I worked with and promoted in Extension and eventually hired her to be the head diversity officer for the system when I was the system president, is Vicki Washington. And with her help and guidance, because we felt there wasn't enough diversity, we needed to have more of an emphasis, more of a push on that, both in terms of employment and in terms of the programming we were doing. I formed up a diversity council that was advisory to me as the chancellor, and we'd meet, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a year. But I talked to people a lot more between those meetings than just that, and Vicki kind of staffed it, headed it up. And we had people from inside Wisconsin and some people from outside Wisconsin who we invited to be on that to sort of give us advice about programs. And, you know, one of the things that was happening, let's take Cooperative Extension, which is the biggest division in Extension, still is. One of the things that was happening at the time was the programming was evolving consciously because we wanted to be able to say, okay, we're doing for young people in the city what 4-H was doing for a long time for young people in rural areas. How do we provide some of the same kind of leadership skills training for kids in Milwaukee or Madison or Superior that we provided for kids in the more rural areas of the state without diminishing the outreach in the rural areas? So we looked at all of that. We started some programming to address more diverse populations in the youth development area. And one interesting anecdote about the topic of diversity and how it sort of evolved in Extension. So it became apparent, probably late 90s, that the dairy industry in Wisconsin, still thought of as, you know, one of our main, if not our main industry, would collapse if it wasn't for Latino farm workers. Would just collapse. So we were working with farmers then all around the state to help those farm workers, some of whom had been there for a while already and were starting to want to not just be itinerant, but to move their families from Mexico, largely, almost entirely from rural areas of Mexico, to Wisconsin. So in that instance, our community economic development agents were involved, our 4-H youth development agents were involved, and our family living agents were involved in trying to get, working with the farmers who were the employers of these workers, to try to help them get families get settled in small towns all around Wisconsin. And I can still remember one year we had, and we did this every year, we would meet with all of the county board members from all 72 counties who were on the county extension committee. So each county had a committee of its board that dealt with the extension operation in that county, and we would get them together, and they had an active organization that, of their own, and we would kind of staff it. And we had done a survey of Latinos moving into counties all around the state, but we really focused on the rural counties. And, you know, I can still remember laying these data out in front of these county extension or their extension committee people, but these are elected county board members who are on the extension committee, almost all of them from those rural counties, white farming folks, not all, but almost all. And I could tell they were shocked at the numbers when they looked around the state of Latinos who were now living in Oneida County, you know, who hadn't been there 10 years before. They were the ones who we knew about. You know, they were the kind of reported. And we knew there were a lot more that weren't reported. So that was kind of a turning point, I think, in the way these county board members and the farming community started to think, wow, this is, you know, what are we doing about this, and this is going to change everything. And these folks, if they get settled and become citizens, are going to be voters in my county. And I'm an elected official. So it was very interesting conversations. And one of the things that developed out of that was that some of our ag agents with the farmers who were employing Mexican immigrants went down to the towns where the Mexican immigrants were from mm-hmm. with some of them to kind of get a sense of, what that's about. And another thing that came out of that was the question of, who should be able to pay in-state tuition or not. We were arguing that, if you were a young person who was born here or came here when you were 2 years old with your parents who were working on one of the farms and farming communities in Wisconsin, you ought to be able to pay in-state tuition because you're not from out of state in the sense that we usually think of that. And that's, that's a sensitive, touchy issue not only here but around the country. But when we were arguing for that, we were able to bring some of the farmers who employed these people saying, look, this is a workforce issue for Wisconsin. It's not just the nice, it's not just the right thing to do if you think it is or think it isn't. Mm-hmm. But this is an economic, a base economic issue for Wisconsin, and particularly for Wisconsin's iconic industry, the dairy industry. Mm-hmm. We want these young people to stay here, and we want them to go to college. We want them to come back and, be leaders in our communities and be able to earn a living in the 21st century with some kind of post-secondary credential. So getting to that point from where things were when I started, when I first came in 96, was kind of amazing. The tenor of these discussions changed around what diversity meant pretty profoundly.
So I want to ask a follow-up. You mentioned Wisconsin a few times, and then you just mentioned the fact that some of Extension folks would travel back to Mexico with the Latino Mexicans who worked here.
Right.
So the question is, the Wisconsin idea I think should be reciprocal, meaning it's not just we smart folks here at the university, imbuing knowledge. It sounds like, at least for this example, traveling back to Mexico is a chance for the folks who travel to learn about the community.
Absolutely.
I wonder if you have other possible sort of four examples of where we here on campus learn as much doing the Wisconsin idea.
Yeah.
As we hopefully provide.
Right. Well, yeah, let me give you a very different kind of example, but I think a very good one. So one of the things we put together when I was a leader in Extension was known as the Collaborative Nursing Program. So what we did was we said we want to learn about what people who are involved in nursing around the state need from the university, and we were really focused on people who did not have a BSN, did not have a baccalaureate degree, might have had an RN, might have had an LPN, might have had an associate degree, but were being told now by many employers, whether there are hospitals or nursing homes or assisted living ventures or schools that hire nursing staff, you really need to have a BSN either to stay or to move up in your profession in our organization, right? And so we did a survey of people who were in the nursing profession, didn't have the BSN around the state, and we found, I forget the number now, but it was not unexpectedly, a large number. I mean, thousands and thousands of people, almost all women at the time, almost all people who, were working full-time, very often spouses, very often children, place-bound in that sense, but needing to, quote-unquote, go to college or go back to college to get a BSN. So when we heard of, you know, what they wanted, needed, what their lives were like, we started this collaborative nursing program. So we got the nursing deans together from the five campuses in the system that offered the Bachelor of Science in Nursing, including Madison, including Milwaukee, three others, and said, how can we, as a system, help these people all over the state? And again, you know, the point, Troy, I often made with our colleagues inside the university in a project like this was, look, these are hardworking, tax-paying Wisconsin citizens who supply in part your salary and mine. And what are we doing for them? You know, we have an obligation to make the Wisconsin idea real in this case for these people. So we started this program whereby we had, it was called at the time, I think, compressed TV. You could broadcast stuff to some TVs on some kind of alternate channel whereby those people could go to the closest campus to them. So, you know, if you had a two-year campus, the Barron County UW College's campus, and that was, you know, 40 miles away from where you lived, well, you could go there and we would have these courses put up on compressed television and they could watch it there. And there was an evolving ability then, it's much more advanced now, of people to do their lab work on computers. You know, you don't have to necessarily to do it all go to a physical lab. So we started to use that. And we got extension brokering this, got the five campuses that had the nursing programs to say, okay, we're going to all offer a joint curriculum to these people, which was a big step at the time. You know, there's still, and this is still out there now, never mind, you know, we're talking, I don't know, this, I came in 96, this happened, you know, probably late 90s. Still a lot of that feeling very often on campus as well. You know, if you want to study James Joyce, you really have to study it here because, you know, if you go to the other campus, they don't really understand. Or even worse, if you want to study James Joyce, you better study with me because the other English professor really doesn't get, you know, that proprietary sense that you can only really learn what you need to learn from me or from my department or from my campus. So we got beyond that, and I'll give the nursing faculty great credit for this. They saw the need, and they were willing to step up to it. So they agreed, we're going to have a common curriculum. We're going to deliver it this way. It'll be a joint degree, collaborative nursing program, but it'll be jointly offered, but the graduate will be able to pick which campus they want to get the degree from. So that got launched, and that has been wildly successful. I don't know now how many people have graduated. We could check and find out, but it's still going strong. And we now have people, Troy, given the advances in the technology using the internet where, you know, compressed TV is long gone, some people who get the degree without ever having set foot on a campus. Sometimes the first time they set foot on the campus is when they go to commencement, if they want to do that, and they're all invited. So, you know, this is, I think, a great story of using the resources we had system-wide in a profession to respond to a real need that individual people had for their own personal and professional development, but also the state had, because given the population in this state and in the United States, in this state more than others, where we're getting older faster than some other states, the need to have trained medical folks available out around the state, especially in the rural areas, is really very high. So I'm very proud of, you know, the way we Extension with its sister campuses responded in that particular instance. You know, very, very different from the Mexican farm worker example, but still both very tangible current examples of the Wisconsin idea and how it's still alive and well.
A couple more things, I think, before we wrap up today. The first is, I want to transition now from, you know, your 4 years as vice chancellor, but I want to make sure if there's anything that you want to say more about these sort of first 4 years, I want to let you have space to talk about that.
No, I don't think so, and I've kind of, you know, I've kind of blended in some ways already the 4 years as vice chancellor and the 4 years as chancellor, because they really were, for me, kind of seamless in that sense.
Mm-hmm. So then maybe you alluded to it when we a little bit previously when you talked about applying for the job, but so let's start off then with why apply for this job of chancellor of extension.
Right. Well, again, it felt kind of natural to me. I'd been doing the job for 4 years. I'd been out and around the state a lot, gotten to learn it. One of the ways I pitched myself to the search committee, the university search committee and the Board of Regents committee that, there was, because this was when you move to the chancellor position, the Board of Regents gets involved. So there is a select committee, and there was one for this search as well. So you kind of go through two hurdles of the institutional search and screen committee and then the regent search and screen committee. And in both cases, I said to them what I just said to you about having been here long enough and gotten out and around the state enough to really have a feel for what Wisconsinites expected from the university and from Extension, who is really the unit that delivers an awful lot of that off campus. And at the same time, having been here only 4 years and having worked at the University of Minnesota and the State University of New York and for the Board of Regents, the big coordinating board in a huge state like New York, I also brought some things from outside. So I was kind of the innie-outie candidate, and I consciously positioned myself that way as kind of a you get the best of both worlds. You get somebody who knows, understands, appreciates the state and what the university needs to do for it, but you don't get somebody who has never been anywhere else. You don't get somebody who's kind of locked into, well, this is the way we do it here, and that's the way we're going to continue to do it because this is the way we've always done it. You get somebody who has an outside view of what we do as well. So that seemed to be a saleable argument.
So you said, and you have been sort of blending the two in the anecdote you've been giving, but what tangible changes come when you become, you know, for lack of a better word, sort of the boss?
Right. Well, you know, one thing is you then move into the ranks of chancellors. So you're sitting at the table then with the system president and all the other chancellors. Monthly and in the metaphorical sense of sitting at the table. So you have to be able to play in that league as well as the provost league. And provosts, by their nature, many of them tend to be heavily academic oriented. I mean, they like being the chief academic officer. And there are sort of two groups of provosts. One is the people who really like that job and want to be in that job and really don't want to do the more external political job of chancellor. And then you have another group of provosts who are chancellors in waiting to get the opportunity to be the chancellor. Interestingly enough, on a sidebar, and we can talk about this more later if you want, but one of the things that's happened as the job of chancellor has evolved, two things have happened. One is that many provosts are doing more and more of the day-to-day management on campuses because the chancellors are so much external officers now, especially around fundraising and political stuff. But another thing that's happened is as the chancellor's job has changed more toward external officer, fundraiser-in-chief, more provosts are saying, I don't want to do it. So when provosts are surveyed nationally now, more of them are saying, I'd want to stay where I am. I really don't want it. I've seen that job up close, and I don't want it, which poses some interesting challenges in leadership development nationally, which I've been working on with ACE, and I can talk about later.
Okay.
There's a different feel around the chancellor's table. It is more competitive. The provost tend to be a little more cooperative. Given the nature of the beast, chancellors tend to be a little more competitive. And as one of my mentors said about the chancellor's job, whether it's a campus or a system one certainly is, you know, to do these jobs well, you have to enjoy the smell of gunpowder. And some provosts don't. Mm-hmm. So I kind of always did, and I'd worked very closely with the system head in New York and the 64 campus presidents that we have in the SUNY system. There were 64 institutions in it. And then I'd worked closely, you know, with the other provosts, but even with chancellors as provost in extension, because, again, unlike the provost at UW-Eau Claire, you know, who gets together with the other provosts once a month, it's not an essential part of her job to work with all the other provosts. Mm-hmm. If you're the provost in extension, it is, because the goods are delivered with and through the campuses in so many ways. So I knew the people. I felt that I'd enjoy working with them, but it is a different feel. And I'll tell you the story. So when I was skipping ahead to when I was president, one of the female chancellors at the time, after we'd had a particularly robust argument around the table among the chancellors and myself on an issue, said to me after the meeting quietly, "Boy, there was a lot of testosterone in the room during that discussion," and most of the chancellors were and still are men, not all of them, but most of them. And there is that feel a little more in the chancellor's job. In the chancellor's job, you also work much more directly with the system president, and that's a difference. When you're the provost, you tend to work more directly with the senior vice president for academic affairs at system. Okay. It's now the vice president. I think Ray took the senior part off, so now the vice president for academic affairs. That's the officer at system that the provosts meet with once a month. When you're the chancellor, you meet with the system president, so you see that job at closer range, right? Mm-hmm. And you also work more directly with the Board of Regents as a chancellor than you do when you're a provost, typically. So those are some of the changes, and, you know, jumping ahead, and we'll get to this in the next day or two, I'm sure, but being chancellor of extension in that sense, and again, having to work with all the other chancellors, be out around the state working with a wide variety of external audiences, working more with the legislature and the governor, certainly when you're chancellor, is really good preparation to be the system president, I think. And we've had two instances now, myself and Ray Cross, where the extension chancellor has been chosen right from that job to be the system president, partly because, again, it's kind of a natural in that regard. And you are, among all the chancellors, you are kind of the innie-outy chancellor in that sense, because you're expected to be out and about so much as the extension chancellor, but also maintaining and building those relationships of trust and colleagueship internally, so you can figure out with the other chancellors how to get what the university has out to that external world in a way that makes sense for everybody.
Who did you, or did you, choose to be then fill your position?
That was this Marvin Van Kekeriks.
Okay.
Right.
So what's the difference then, and this might, anyway, we'll ask this question and see where it goes. So I think you've talked about it a bit, but let me ask it directly. What's the difference between, again, a typical day as at the provost level or the vice chancellor level, mm-hmm. as opposed to now being the chancellor of extension?
Yeah. Well, just internally, the provost is kind of the chief internal academic officer and chief operational officer. So people like, for instance, the head auditor for extension reports to the provost, dotted line to the chancellor. The chief information officer in extension reports to the provost, dotted line to the chancellor. But you are more, again, kind of running internally curriculum development, technology development and maintenance, auditing, budget, development of the budget, working with the chief budget officer is a big responsibility of the provost. Not that, that the chancellor is not involved in that, but you take the first whack at it. Where with in the chancellor's job, you're working more directly and usually with the deans on, you know, the overall development of their divisions, co-op, broadcasting, continuing ed, and you are working a lot more externally with a variety of folks. I mentioned them, some of them already, both external to the institution in terms of the system president, Board of Regents, and then external to the system in terms of all of those external forces that you're working with to get the goods out there. And you know what? Could we take a brief pause while I hit the men's room, which I'm
really... Yeah, we're,
are we done?
I mean, we're at 56. We're at 56 minutes.
No. Okay.
So it might actually just be a nice place just to end today.
That's fine.
And we will pick up where we left off.
Good.
So if you want to, we'll stop it here and then we'll talk a little bit
about
the recording.
Let's do that.
All right, so this concludes...
I drank that big coffee.
So this concludes the first session with Kevin Riley. Okay. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks.